Welcome to Metaphysical Romp with Reverend Paul Hasselbeck and co-host Reverends Bill Holton and Cher Holton. Discover practical applications to bring 21st century metaphysics to work in your life. Here's your host, Paul Hasselbeck.
Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp 2, what I've been calling MR2. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck, and it's another beautiful day in my consciousness. And I'm here in Overland Park, Kansas, at the virtual kitchen table. And at the other end of the kitchen table are my buddies. Hi, buddies.
Hey, how are you doing? This is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton. I'm at the Durham, North Carolina end of this beautiful virtual table. And it is another beautiful day in my consciousness.
And I'm Reverend Dr. Bill Holton. And I'm also at the Durham end of the kitchen table. And it's very definitely another beautiful, beautiful day in my consciousness as well. And as you guys know, Cher and I are the co-founders of an online unity ministry called the Unity Center for the Universal. And that's Y-O-U Universal. It's about you, universalprosperity.com.
And the shortcut, the way you can get there without having to remember all those words, is ucfyp.com.
All right. And I have my website, paulhasselbeck.com, where there isn't a shortcut, where I have my calendar, and of course, my weekly blog called The Absolute Word. And we will be reading one of those today at the end of the program. And so, what's Metaphysical Romp 2 about? It's about spirituality, pseudo-spirituality, science, and pseudoscience. And we kind of just wrap it into one word called metaphysics, where metaphysics means beyond the physical. However, we do not live beyond the physical. We live in the physical. So we include the physical, the mental feeling, and the spiritual. And we are looking at an article, Designing Your Life, How to Use Design Thinking to Create a Happier Life for Yourself. This is part two. And the article is by Bill Burnett and Dave Evans. And they're at Stanford University. So Cher, take it away.
All right. So these guys are designers par excellence. They used to work for Apple, so they definitely are involved in knowing what they do. And what's interesting is this whole idea of design thinking is both a process and a mindset. And what they've done is put it together in a way to apply it to our own lives. We are talking about dysfunctional beliefs and then some design ideas for that we could actually put into practice. And they've given us the structure with the article, but the three of us, of course, are romping around that and adding our own take to it and our own spiritual perspective as we look at it.
Yeah, so we're restructuring and reframing the article.
Of course we are. Last week, we talked about two dysfunctional beliefs that we need to get rid of because they interfere with our ability to be as effective and successful and productive as we want to be. The first one was the belief that knowing your passion will tell you what you need to do with your life. And we totally, that was debunked. So if you want to hear about that, listen to last week's. And by the time you're out of college, you should know where you're going. And if you don't know, you're late. Thank goodness that's a dysfunctional belief as well, because most people have no idea where they're going.
Right. And I remember the pressure when I was an undergrad to be declaring your major and what are you going to be when you grow up?
And yeah, right. And then you got these people that end up with three majors, four majors.
Right. And minors and all kinds of stuff. Yeah. And this is right in our wheelhouse, because in this case, these dysfunctional beliefs are beliefs we're questioning, and the beliefs we hold are answers we hold. So we're back to our common mode of operation, questioning our unquestioned answers. Yes. Okay, so we're going to move on to number three.
Okay, the dysfunctional belief number three that they share is the belief that you should try to optimize the best possible version of yourself. And I can hear people right now saying, well, what's wrong with that?
Right. Or you mean I can have a best possible version?
Because a lot of people do think that's what we're supposed to be doing, is always optimizing the best possible version. But of course, they share why it's a dysfunctional belief, is because it implies that there is just one singular best, and that life is a linear progression towards that singular best. And of course, we really know that's not true.
And that brings to mind a common belief we find in Unity and New Age of folks, and that is we have only one soulmate, right? Mm-hmm. And our job is to find one soulmate, that there's just one singular best. Wow.
Yeah.
It's a relief to let that go.
It really is.
And of course, when you think about it, the old maxim talks about you can't step into the same river twice. Well, it applies to us too. Each day, there's a new us embracing that day. When you think about it, we're not the same us we were last 5 minutes ago or 5 years ago, 20 years ago. So we're a new person every day. And it also said that the dysfunctional belief said that you should try. Well, you know, Yoda would say, don't try, just do.
Don't try.
Just do. Yeah. One of the things we've been playing around with, one idea, is the concept that wherever you are, that is your path.
Yes.
You know, searching for the path, searching for the path. Well, where you are is your path. And with every step, with every choice, you are creating where that path goes. You know, there are amazingly incredible number of ways you can go, and being just choosing that and then doing the very best with what you choose as you move forward.
Yeah. So this gets to their main idea. To reframe it to life design is a journey. Let go of optimizing an end goal and focus on the process and see what happens next.
I love that.
Live in the process. I love that.
And it very definitely is process. And part of that process is that sometimes we've got to reparent our inner child.
Yeah.
In order to get where we want to go.
Yeah, especially if that inner child's having tantrums and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And indirectly, it holds us back in some ways.
Yeah, yeah, very much so.
Okay, so those are the three dysfunctional beliefs that we want to release. And then in this article, they share five ideas from their designing your life concept. And what they've done is taken things they do in their design work, and now they're applying it to how we run our life. So seeing it as a metaphor, which is how we love to think anyway. We love metaphor thinking.
And this is in their book, and this is material from a class that they offer at Stanford. And the thought I had when I read that was like, Irma Gerd, Stanford actually offers the students a course that will help them design their lives as they move forward.
Yeah.
Radical.
That should be offered everywhere. That should be a course everywhere. Oh, and these guys have done a couple of TED Talks as well. If people want to listen to their TED Talk, we listened to one of them the other day.
And they're excellent.
One of them is kind of a summary of this article, really. And he did it as a TED Talk. And
okay. So kind of cool. Let's remind them that the chief author is Bill Burnett. Mm-hmm. And the second one is Dave Evans, right?
Right.
Yes, that's correct.
So
look, or you could probably type in design your life.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you go look at their website, then all of those links are there. That's where we found the link. So
okay, great.
We have resources there. Why don't we look at these five ideas and
let's
start knocking those out and see how we can relate them to what we talk about in our spiritual perspective.
Yeah.
So the first
spiritual metaphysics, whatever you want to call it.
Science, we'll bring it all in. Okay. So designing your life idea number one is connect the dots.
Wow. What a concept.
So kind of like we just said, what we do with science, spirituality, what we believe, that kind of thing. The number one reason that people say they take their class from what they said is that they want their life to be more meaningful or purposeful. How often have we heard that? That's what people are searching for.
Yep.
So what they looked at are the three identities, and this is what they're talking about connecting: who you are, what you believe, and what you do.
You know what? And I have to add a fourth: what we are, remembering that we're divine.
Okay. Yes.
Good point.
Yeah, that is definitely, and that ties in very much with what you believe.
Yes.
Depending on where you go with that. I know in our mentoring programs, one of the things we work with our groups on is creating their own credo statements, their personal belief. What do they really believe? Because I'm amazed, and I'm sure you're seeing this in your classes too, Paul, how people can't really articulate what they believe.
It is astounding. And yet they're living from those unarticulated beliefs unconsciously. And brilliant that you're designing a course that you start with the people knowing what they believe. Because mm-hmm. once I know what I believe, I can choose to keep it or throw it out. I can question it. I can work with it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the whole point is that will change as you evolve. But if you don't know what you believe, you can't even question it.
Right.
You just exactly. defend it with your life, but you don't even know what you're defending.
Yes. Great.
So, do you want to share our little tale? This is our credo.
Yeah, we thought we'd
that'd share. That'd be great. Folks, I haven't heard this.
Well, this isn't really our belief. This is what we live. This is one thing we do live by, though.
Yeah, we've been living by this for probably 40 years now. We decided as a couple, as a working couple, that we would determine our lifestyle and wrap our work around it.
Really good.
And that's worked for us for 40 years.
Yeah. And it does change how you look at everything you do. And you start with, how do you want to live? What do you want your lifestyle to be like? And then look at the work you do and wrap it around it. Just make choices. So we made choices not to take contracts that would put one of us away for 3 months at a mm-hmm. corporation across the country. You know, we could have made a lot more money that way. But one of our lifestyles is we do this together and we get to be together.
So I don't know if this is related. However, I know that I was operating from a belief that I work to have the money to do what I like to do. Mm-hmm. You know, the entertainment, the cruises, traveling, and all of that. Now, there was a time in which I really wasn't looking at the work as necessarily being the most fulfilling part of my life. Well, now the three of us, the work we do is our avocation. In a way, we've melded them in a way that supports us. And I would say in a way I couldn't imagine. Okay, I'm going to put you on a spot. And that spot is, you talked about helping people formulate their credos. Are you guys willing to say one other belief either you both have or you individually have, that's part of your own personal credo?
Sure.
Sure. Yeah. You want me to go?
Because people may want an example.
Right. And ours are kind of unusual. All right. Because, you know, they're the standard ones of what you believe about God, what you believe about forgiveness and all of that. But we've kind of taken them to a different level. So, for example, one of our core beliefs or credo statements is gratitude is our currency.
Say that again.
Gratitude is our currency.
Yes.
So when you go from that perspective, it doesn't mean you don't need money, but money becomes that instrument of exchange that we use in this skin school, which we do need to understand and treat with respect. But our currency of how rich we really are is way above just how much money we have.
That's beautiful.
So the gratitude is the currency, and gratitude is kind of what underwrites so much of what we do and the way we do it. And I don't know that.
Yeah.
And let's see, what would be in.
Well, when you align your human nature with your divine nature, you will be able to divinely order your experience.
That's
amazing. Okay. So,
in school.
So, are you willing to put that in the first person?
Oh, yeah, because mm-hmm. we do mm-hmm. when we say it.
It's an affirmation. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, let's hear it for the folks so people can hear what it sounds like.
Well, I've done it two ways. I've done it that I align my human nature with my divine nature and divinely order my experience.
Yeah,
I've also said I and Cher align our divine natures with our human natures.
That fantastic.
Kind of, I say it two ways.
And we, because we have our business together, our life together.
Yeah.
We're kind of connected at the hip.
Yeah. So I totally understand it. And the reason why I ask you to do that, Bill, I know I put you on the spot again, is I will ask people in class, we'll put that in the first person and they go blank.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And yeah. It's when you put in the, when we put it in the first person, when I put it in the first person, that's where ownership really begins.
Most definitely.
And kind of an addition to how you do an affirmation and our belief that gratitude is our currency.
Yes.
Recently, I've been using I'm grateful in front of an affirmation, and it's really amazing what it does. Instead of I divinely order my life, I'm grateful I divinely order my life. I'm grateful money flows to me easily and effortlessly. So it's like confirming it's already happening because you wouldn't have the gratitude if it wasn't there.
When I hear you say that, it feels to me like it activates more feeling nature.
Yes, it does. It's exciting. It gets you, gets your excitement going. So
yes.
That's still in process because we've just started doing that very recently. It's been kind of a wow for me. It's like taking my affirmations to a whole new level.
And it's another way that you're demonstrating for our listeners how you are changing over time. The way you do things and what you believe are not fixed in concrete.
Yeah. Let me tell you a little activity we did that kind of ties in with that. You know, a long time ago, we wrote the book, Right Thoughts, Right Choices, Right Actions. And it's a little book, 200 of the best choices Unity people should make. And we did it when we were starting SEE, actually. It was way back then. So we still have a bunch of these books. So we have given them out to people and said, there's still a lot of good stuff in here, but your challenge is go through and highlight where you think we've changed. And if we rewrote this book today, how would we change it?
That's fun.
And it's really been fun to hear some people give us feedback on, I know you wouldn't say this anymore. Here's what you'd say, which tells us they're thinking at that higher level.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Why don't we try to wrap up this first designing your life idea before we pivot to the absolute word. What they say is if you can make a connection between who you are, what you believe, and what you do, you will experience your life as more meaningful. To help connect the dots, we do two things. The first thing is we ask people to write about why they work, your work view. What's your theory of work? What's it for? What's work in service of? And we were kind of answered that for ourselves, right? And then the second thing is a little harder to do in a single page, but we still ask people to try and write up their ideas on the meaning of life.
What in one page.
Meaning of life. Why are you here? What is your view of how the world works? Your life view. When you can connect your work view and your life view together in a coherent way, you'll start to experience your life as meaningful.
Mm.
Wow. So one page, your ideas on your meaning.
Yeah, that's tough. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. It's time to pivot to the absolute word, because if we get another topic, we'll have a 1 hour program, because that's just the way we work. The absolute word is based on Sunday messages appearing in Daily Word, a copyrighted Unity publication, and has been used with permission. And this comes from May 2nd, 2021, and the word is grace. And I just have to say, if you go to the Daily Word and you read what I did, I basically pretty much rewrote it because my view of grace is very different than a traditional view of grace. So as you listen, see what you think. I offer grace as I remember my divinity. Since God is principle, God does not punish, reward, or offer us grace. God is the fullness of our divinity, always available for us to claim at any moment. Grace is something we offer each other and ourselves based on the principles of benevolence and generosity. When someone does or says something that we do not like, we might be tempted to be unkind, hurtful, or even hateful. However, there is a kinder and better way. In those moments, we can remember our divinity and choose to offer kindness and grace instead of judgment and punishment. When I'm being hard on myself, I can remember to offer myself a huge helping of kindness and grace. Then it is easier to correct any perceived error I may have made. I offer grace as I remember my divinity. Hooray! I really like my interpretation of grace.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah. I love it.
We don't have to wait for something to happen. We are the givers of grace. And that's another way we activate the principles of generosity and benevolence, just like forgiveness is an activity we do, activating those two. Mm-hmm. Okay, so on those final words, I thank our listeners. I thank Bill and Cher. And for now, this is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck signing off, saying goodbye, and asking you to make it another beautiful day in your consciousness.
I agree. This is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton saying, yes, you are divine and you offer yourself grace.
And this is the Reverend Dr. Bill Holton. And on behalf of the three of us, we say have a graceful week until we meet again.